Hi everyone, welcome back to Prevention Nation,
where we believe education and awareness can change the culture of violence. I'm Abby Wallace.
And I'm Roy Lutz.
Please note, in this episode, we are discussing topics that could be triggering to some listeners.
Feel free to skip this episode if you need or want.
Okay, so welcome back to Prevention Nation. It's Roy here, and I'm happy to share with our guests that we have, or our listeners, that we have an exciting guest here to share some really powerful messages. So I also do want to note for our listeners that there may be some triggers in this conversation today. So please pay attention to your own emotional needs and your self-care. On that note, guest Kelly, share with us a little bit about our audience, who you are.
My name is Kelly, and I am a survivor of rape. I was raped probably, I think it was 12 years ago. I'm just here to talk about my experience and how I have healed and moving forward.
Wow. Okay. So this is definitely going to be a powerful story, I feel. And when we think, you know, when you say that you were, if you don't mind me asking, Kelly, you know, it's been 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know when we look at cases where prosecution rates are low, and we look at consequences for rapists, and, you know, and they get, you know, 3 years in jail, 6 years in jail. I just wonder, and I hope this doesn't sound crass, but like 12 years has been your sentence. Have you served your sentence? Are you done with the suffering? Are you done with the pain?
That's the thing, is I feel like we're a lifetime sentence.
Yeah.
You carry that with you forever. He got 4 years.
He gets 4 years and you get a life sentence. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, well, I'm really sorry, first of all. But I think that's a powerful concept when we think about what victimization looks like, from rape, domestic violence. We look at the sentence is not equitable, you know? So we have somebody who perpetrates this violent act, and I've actually always argued too, Kelly, that they evade a sentence. You know, let's say he does 4 years in prison, but he does 4 years where he doesn't have to worry about the healing. He doesn't have to worry about the economics of surviving. He doesn't have to, I mean, he gets to escape away from the reality that he created. And meanwhile, you have to live it, along with all of other life's responsibilities. So
yeah, life does not stop for anything. You sure still doesn't. Have to wake up the next day and go to work. You have to take care of your kids. It does not stop. And that's a part of balancing what happened to you and still motions of life.
So speaking to that, share with us your story. I mean, how did... You had to wake up and you had to live your life. So how did this happen?
It happened on a Sunday morning. You know, he came to my home on the basis that he was at the time bringing my husband home. So I knew the person.
Okay.
So that's, you know, how he got to my house, how it happened. And, you know, I had to go back to work on Tuesday morning. I had just started a new job. My daughter was young. My son was a teenager, trying to hide that from them. It took a toll on my family. It took a toll on me.
Yeah. How long had you known him?
Probably about 3 years.
So this was definitely not a stranger.
No.
And he was driving your husband home.
That's when he came to my door. He said it was a language barrier.
Okay.
He didn't speak very good English. He said that he had my husband in the car.
Yeah.
He did not.
So that was the ruse to get his, to...
Correct.
Yeah, let him in.
Yes.
Yeah. So then what happens that next day? So he commits this horrific act, and you have to wake up that next morning.
It was around 4 in the morning. It lasted for 2 hours, and I called a friend of mine, and I spoke to her, and I told her, and she said, you know, you need to call the police. by that time, I had talked to her. Then I called my mom. My parents came over. I got the police involved. My husband at the time finally came home, told him what happened. The police came and took me to the hospital and started the proceedings of criminal charges.
Okay. So I guess I would... I guess, you know, I'd like to know a little bit about that. What was horrible. That proceeding? Horrible.
Horrible.
Talk about that.
I am in a small town. So it was very hard to get any action done. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a police officer tell me they had signed a warrant, but they weren't going to go after him. You know, it was out of his control. What ended up happening to get things moving is that police officer happened to tell my brother and my uncle what happened. No one knew. Mm-hmm. He took it upon himself to tell two of my family members.
So he just disclosed your private information. Yeah.
And then I went to Butler County, and I just walked into Butler County's office just hysterical, begging them to do something for me, to take my case, because it was locally. Mm-hmm. And one of the detectives there, Mike Kraft, he helped so much. He took the case, and he really did something for me. They went after him. And they went and arrested him and booked him. And then I had to go through the process of, you know, it's not so cut and dry. You have to go in front of a public hearing. And then it's up to the judge on whether or not he wants it to go to grand jury.
Yeah.
So you have to tell your story to a bunch of strangers in a courtroom in front of him. Mm-hmm. And then you go to the grand jury. And then the grand jury, you know, takes it over.
Yeah.
But I owe a lot to Mike, because I don't think anything would have happened had he not got involved.
Can I ask you, Kelly, when we think about people's response, law enforcement's, advocates or shelters or just family members, when we think about response, and it's evident by looking at you and talking with you, that this officer's response to you was profoundly impactful. What did he do so that was so special? Because I think maybe other people can learn from this. You know, whatever he did, let's replicate that with all survivors and all victims.
He was compassionate. He had empathy. He believed me.
That's the first one, right?
He believed me. Yeah. And he said, okay, this guy needs to be arrested. This needs to happen. And he made sure it happened.
Wow.
And just believing you. Believe in the person that's coming to you, telling you what's happening. And because there's so many people that try to say you lie. And even in grand jury, the thing that amazed me the most was when I was telling my story. And it was shocking to me. It was a woman. She asked what I was wearing.
Yeah.
At 4 a.m. in my own home.
Yeah, I mean, with that question, what did you expect me to say? I was wearing what anybody wears at 4 a.m. in my own home.
Yeah.
Right? And yeah.
It just shocked me that...
How did that make you feel when she asked you that?
It made me just... I was in shock more than anything. Like, why would that matter, what I was wearing?
Yeah.
It shouldn't matter at all what anyone is wearing.
No.
That should never be irrelevance at all.
Yeah, I mean, and we hear this routinely. That's, I mean, it's one of the very first initial experiences into victim blaming that victims have almost universally across the board when they report situations like this, rape, sexual assault, even sexual harassment, even as minor as policy violations of, you know, like sexual harassment is what did you do? What were you wearing? What did you say? It's like, exactly. What does any of that have anything to do with this?
Yeah.
So you get this response from the justice system. You said it was horrible at first. So was it horrible, and then when they got involved, when Mike Kraft got involved, it turned, or did you continue? Was it arduous and difficult through the whole process?
It turned once he was arrested, and then it started court proceedings. It was like continued. It took probably, I would say, up to, I think it was 6 or 7 months.
Okay.
That we finally settled. I could have went in front of a jury, but I did not want to do that because they wanted to get family members involved, and I just didn't want to drag my family through that. So we did settle. They had him on kidnapping charges. They had him on some other charges, but eventually they charged him for the rape, and he got 4 years in prison.
Yes, I mean, while, you know, I guess my brain just goes to, you know, you're a victim of rape and you have to go through this process of disclosing this, sharing this with strangers, getting these court dates. Now, all this time that it takes to actually have to reach either a settlement or a conviction or anything, at the same time, you're still having to process. So we have this expectation that victims still, that you have to go through these processes, you have to testify, you have to do, but also heal, also still, you know, parent, pay bills, all that stuff. And then through that whole process, I wonder, did you have this worry that what if the outcome isn't what I hope it is?
I didn't allow myself to do that.
Okay.
I tried to hang on to faith. Okay. Faith that he was going to be put away. I had faith in myself and my conviction that he would be put away. But when you talk about the process, I don't think I ever processed what happened to me. I went through the motions of it all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the.
So how am I trying to ask this? Like, if we're expected to go through these court proceedings and all these things that you never fully really processed right away, all the things, did it come back later?
It did.
Yeah?
It did.
Because you have to process it sooner or later, right?
Right. But it took me a while to process it. I had to accept it. I had to accept this happened to me. Because I feel like if you don't accept it, you're putting it in the back of your head and it starts to spiral in negative actions. Mm-hmm. And I did that. There was a lot of things that I was doing in my life that was not positive.
Yeah.
In how I handled things. You know, a lot of people go to drugs, alcohol, and things like that. And there were certain aspects of my life where I was just trying to not deal with it.
Yeah.
But I think once I accepted it, I said, okay, this happened to me, but it can't control me. I have to get ahead of it. I have to learn how to heal from it. And by accepting it, that led me to the next step of, okay, what now?
Yeah. Well, let's get there in a second, the what now part. But I think, Kelly, I think you've really touched on a very specific and an important factor when we think about this stuff is that you can't heal something if you can't speak it, you know, if you can't say it. And by acknowledging that and getting to that space, then you can actually start to process and work into that, you know, that healing. But that's a hard time, right?
Yes, very much so.
And, you know, as you said, like going through that process, you know, the decisions you make, you know, you don't want to drag your family through these ordeals. You don't want to, you know, it has such far-reaching effects. And there you were, this hero, survivor, trying to mitigate other people's hurt that, you know, I mean, what courage it took in you. So congratulations. I'm really proud Thank of you. So, okay, so now, then what?
You know, I want to say it probably took me a few years to really start the healing process to where I could really speak about it, accept it, and sit with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actually sit with it and deal with it.
Yeah.
It took me a few years before I could do that.
What was the primary holdup? What was the barrier? What was the thing stopping you?
I couldn't tell you. I just don't think I wanted to deal with the emotions. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to deal with how it made me feel.
Yeah.
I didn't want to deal with all of the stuff that I had pushed down.
Well, and that's to your point. That's where, you know, you're exactly right. We see a lot of people, when we see people who are drug addicted, homeless, going through, you know, any number of things, ills in life, and we, you know, and we cast judgment about what they kind of person we think they're. We have no idea what emotions, what hurt and trauma they're trying, like you said, to just not deal with. And like getting off, you know, those bad or unhealthy coping behaviors means facing that trauma and that hurt. And that isn't easy. And that's what it sounds like you're saying. You just, at this point, you weren't ready to face.
I wasn't.
And face the hurt.
I was not ready to face it. But once I had to step back and look at my life and where I was, and it was like, okay, I'm not doing myself any good.
So was the tipping point a reflection on the trajectory I'm on right now is not healthy? This isn't going to be good.
Right. Okay. And it's spilling out into everything else.
Okay.
Your life, your home life.
I'm poisoning everything else with this.
Yeah, you do. You do. It's literally, it's a poison that it just poisons everything around you.
Okay. So now you make this decision. I'm going to stop poisoning the well that I drink from and the people around me. I'm going to accept my truth. I'm going to own this. I'm going to start working on healing. What does that look like? What does healing look like?
Messy.
Yeah, talk about that.
You know, I think my first thing I had to get over was rage.
Yeah.
Rage was a huge thing in me. I had so much rage, anger. I had to deal with that. I had to let that go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the next
rage
step,
at who? Do you mind if I ask?
Rage at him. Rage that the world wouldn't stop for me. Rage that hurt my family. I lost a lot. You know, it was hard and at home, so it caused problems in my home. It caused a lot of stress. I got pregnant later, but it was not from the rape.
Yeah.
I was pregnant with twins. The stress of all of that affected me. I lost my twins. You know, my marriage fell apart. So that rage was just for everything. And there's nowhere to put that rage at. How do you just, the man's in prison, now what? You know, I wanted him to suffer the way I was.
Yeah.
I wanted him to feel my pain. This is what you've done. But it wouldn't have mattered. He would have never cared anyway.
No, I don't. I don't think for even one second he would.
No, because people that can commit that, I just don't believe they have a soul. I truly believe they are evil.
Well, and I mean, yeah, I mean, I just don't think, even on a very basic biological level, anybody willing and able to do that doesn't care how you feel anyways.
No.
So we're not, this isn't, it's not even a question of whether or not this man feels remorseful about it or not. He wouldn't have done it if there was the capacity to feel remorseful for this, an act like this. So
correct.
So it's messy. This healing is messy. It's complicated. It's not quick.
No.
You know, we already talked about that. This is a life sentence. Healing, recovering is a life sentence. Life in general, growth itself is a life journey, right? We are transforming constantly. Well, you've just thrown in this massive, experience, traumatic experience to also navigate and manage. So when does it start to feel hopeful? When does the help for you, because I know it's different for every person, when did it for you start to feel like I may be heading for the first time in a very long time in a good place?
I think when I let go of the rage and I started to do more positive things and I stopped doing the negatives. Yeah. I stopped living the certain lifestyle that I was living. I let go of that. And I started just trying to do more positives. Self-love.
Mm-hmm.
Finding your self-worth. That was a whole nother ball game because it took away so much of my self-worth. And I think you kind of struggle with that. You know you're worthy, but I struggle with that sometimes to this day. But I just started trying to. I got therapy. I did. I started going to therapy. Finding a good therapist helps. Talking about it helps. Helping other people helped me too. You know, I didn't want to be hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I was hurting people around me. And I didn't want to be like that. But, I could tell I was getting better when I let go of so much negativity in my life.
Does an experience like this have long-term implications of feelings or perceptions of safety?
I do have some triggers.
Yeah.
But I've always been very strong-willed, stubborn. And from the very beginning, I always told myself, this will not control my life. Okay. This will not make me stop living my life.
Right.
I still will travel by myself. I still do things by myself. There's times where I read the room more now, okay. I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I'm more aware of my surroundings. Yeah. I pay attention to little things more. So in a lot of ways, it does affect how you feel safe
because
you are checking your environment more.
Yeah.
You're not as carefree.
Right.
I didn't want to be a victim. I wanted to be a survivor. You know, I want to survive this. I'm not going to be a victim to this.
Do you prefer that term then? You don't,
I do.
You don't like to be called a victim?
Mm-mm. Yeah. No. I mean,
Survivor of sexual assault, rape.
Right.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you for clarifying.
Because I feel like sometimes the term victim makes me feel like weak. I'm not a victim so much. I survived that.
Yeah.
So, but
I think that's a really good distinction. Thank you, Kelly. I think that's a really great distinction because we don't do that in other areas of survivorship. You know, we don't ever reference somebody who survived a car crash as a victim of a car crash.
Right.
Right. But for some reason, domestic violence, sexual assault, rape, it's very curious. I'm going to have to do a lot of research into this, but it's very curious why we reference that as victim. I wonder if there's an application there for prosecution purpose.
That's what I wonder, if it's a term for the justice system and that's how it's kind of wrapped in together.
Yeah, maybe that helps propel a conviction if somebody was victimized.
Right.
You know, so, okay. Interesting conversation though, because I'd really love to look at that a little bit more, the etymology of the words and why we use those words. So, yeah, so you didn't want to see yourself as a victim, saw yourself as a survivor. Yeah. And so now, this is 12 years later. What challenges as a survivor are you facing?
I have my triggers. I have my moments where it will still come back to me.
Yeah.
In the very beginning, I had night terrors. I couldn't go to sleep. I couldn't stay asleep. It was horrible. I've gotten past a lot of that, but every now and then I will have flashbacks.
Okay.
And they, you know, it's usually at nighttime. I'll have dreams or nightmares, whatever you want to call it. For the most part, it doesn't come up to my mind like it used to. I just want people to know that in due time, it does get better. It does get better in time. Once you accept it, you get the therapy, you start to heal from it, and you start to do more positives. For me, getting out in nature has helped.
Mm-hmm.
Hiking, walks, anything to ground myself has helped tremendously.
So, and when you say time does heal it, you know, time does... What, if you're able to pinpoint, I'm not sure, but like, what specifically does it heal? Like, does it make it... I guess what I'm getting at is, I mean, it doesn't erase it, right? I mean, it doesn't make the memory go away. So what specifically gets easier in time, do you think?
I guess for me, it's less painful.
Yeah.
The anger isn't there as much anymore.
That's what I was wondering. I was wondering about the anger, because I think when you mentioned that you didn't want to let that control you and drive you, anger has a real powerful effect on our health. I mean, when you look at anger all the time, it creates stress and anxiety. I mean that makes you sick. And I don't think that's pretty counterproductive to healing when you're always angry and sick and stressed and worried and scared. So
you do. That anger just spirals out of control and it just takes over. But in time, the anger, I don't have that anger anymore.
So what replaces the anger?
I just filling that anger with more positives, being a better person, helping other people, being a better mom. You know, just anything I can better myself at, because life is about change.
Yeah.
And every day you try to change and do better with what you have.
I apologize for the hard question, or if you even if it upsets you, but like, is forgiveness anywhere in your heart? How does that play into healing?
That's a hard question for me. I want to say, I don't know if I have forgave him.
Yeah.
I have, my biggest thing is I've accepted it. If I was to see him walking down the street tomorrow, no. I don't think I could ever forgive him. I really don't.
Yeah.
And when I hear people forgiving other people for horrendous things, I always look at them and think, wow, that takes a lot. I don't know if I could ever forgive him.
Well, you and I, Kelly, are very similar people then. Because I don't have that capacity. I know that about myself. To your point, I'm not ever... I admire people who can find forgiveness in their healing. I think there's something admirable about that. But there's also a part of me like you. I sometimes find that as selfless to forgive. I don't know. I care about myself too much, and what you did was so heinous. It doesn't deserve forgiveness.
That's what you don't deserve my forgiveness. You don't deserve any kind of kindness or forgiveness.
Not for me anyways, right?
No, not for me. But
you find it elsewhere in your life, hey, great. I wish you all the best, that you get better and never do this again and find a kindness in your life. But it is not incumbent upon you as his victim to lend that to him or help him through that process,
no,
right?
No, not at all. And for those people that have been through this, I think you can still get better and you can still heal without forgiving someone.
Thank you for saying that. Because I think that it's important for... All survivors do not look and feel the same. And I think that there are a lot of survivors who probably hear, you have to forgive.
Yeah, and that's, you have to forgive to move on. And no, you don't.
No.
You can move forward in way more positive ways and still not forgive.
Right. Healing doesn't have to look doesn't have to be inclusive of forgiving, and or absent of forgiving, you'll never heal. I just don't think that's true either. So I appreciate you saying those words, and I hope a listener who has gone through this experience and having a tough time processing healing because of this concept of that they're supposed to forgive too, I hope they hear your words. So
there's no playbook on this.
No.
It's do what's best for you in positive ways. That's right. That's the thing I can say is the playbook, what everybody writes down, what everybody tries to tell you, you can listen. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you know yourself and you know what you need to do.
Well, you're so right. I mean, I've always said with parenting, you know, because each of my three kids are very different people, yet they were all raised in the same home. And I've always thought to myself, there are a million parenting books out there, which to me illustrates that there's no right way to parent. If there was one parenting book that in all of time, then I would be convinced, yeah, there's clearly a way to do this. But the fact that everybody has an opinion on it tells me there's all different. Well, the same thing I think is true for, to the point you just made, is healing, self-help, recovery. This looks so different for everybody. There's a million books and a million. Not that I would ever encourage somebody to not utilize resources and supports. Please utilize resources, right, and supports. But also, I think equally important is recognize who you are and what you specifically need to heal. And that should be a compass for you, how to move forward.
Right. So. And just always choose more positives, just the negatives. I think once you start letting the little negatives come in, they start to consume you. Mm-hmm. So each day, you know, I had to get to the point where every morning, okay, it's like you have a plate of food in front of you. Four things are allowed on that plate. That's it. Don't overwhelm yourself with so many things. Because I think if you have a visual, these are the four things in front of me, this is what I'm going to work on today.
Yeah.
Nothing else can overcome this. This is what we're going to work on today, and it's just daily steps.
Yeah.
Of working on specific things that you want to work on.
Well, I mean, I think that's a really great analogy, because that's four things is manageable. For me, it might just be three things, mm-hmm, that are manageable. But if I have to throw on, if I have other people putting in my ear that I have to throw on forgiveness, and then I have to throw on, you know, also this, whatever else that they determined, yoga, you got to get into some yoga, you got to do some stretching, or maybe you should read more, maybe you should journal. It's like, well, right now I'm trying to just, A, accept what happened to me, B, put food on my, you know, on the table for my kids, and get myself up in the morning. Can I work on those three things alone right now? Right. You know? So it has to be manageable. So, well, Kelly, then, you know, so in sharing your story, and we, you know, before we came down into the podcast room, we were talking with some, the director and the fund developer here. And, you know, I just think your voice is so powerful. Listening to your story is very powerful. Hearing your story is very powerful. Yeah, I would encourage you to, you know, continue to use your voice to help survivors and lift up other people. What was the relevance of that in your life? Did you have that in your process of healing? Did you have somebody else, a survivor, or anybody that you looked up to as a person that helped you through it?
I had certain people play certain parts. Mm-hmm. I never talked to a survivor. I never had a survivor that I knew.
Yeah.
Talk to me. You know, Megan, she helped me with resources. She spoke to me about certain things. My mom was a very big support system. The one thing that I guess through the journey of it is rape is so taboo, and it makes people uncomfortable when you do talk about it.
It sure does.
So I think as a survivor, a lot of the times, sometimes you just don't talk about it because you don't want to make someone else feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So with me, that's why I have the survival tattoo on my forearm. It lets other people know, okay, she's been through what I've been through.
Yeah.
Maybe I could talk to her about it. If you talk to people that have experienced it, it helps. It just helps. And I think with me sharing my story and letting people know I'm open to talk about it, you know, I might cry, I might, mm-hmm, you know, but I'll get through it. It just helps, because I think talking to someone that's been through a similar situation helps more, because other people that haven't been through it don't understand as much.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's, I mean, yeah, you said that very eloquently. I just, you know, when you mentioned that, when I asked you, did you have anybody, and you said you didn't know anybody who had been, I guarantee you knew somebody. I guarantee there were people in your life that had experienced rape, sexual assault, or some abuse. And
now I know several people.
See, and I think the key there is that there was a time, and you know, and I'm 52 years old, almost 53. I definitely come from a generation where that is your family business. You keep that. You don't talk about that in public. We're not airing our dirty laundry. We are in a very different time now, and I think it's interesting how our I shouldn't say you. I'm going to just say me. My generation, because I'm not going to age you or anything. my generation. Still to this day is very uncomfortable with this new generation. We typically talk very poorly about these young people. Oh, they're just, everybody's has this, everybody has that. And it's like, yeah, this generation, it's not that they all of a sudden have all these things. It's that these things have always existed. They're just talking about them, and we never did. And I think you're exactly right. You didn't think you knew anybody like that, because nobody was talking about it. Now that you're talking about it, all of a sudden you know people that have been through this experience.
And you talk about the generational thing. I'm with your generation.
Okay, so you aged yourself. Thank you. I hate doing that. So.
That generation is the suck it up generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, lift yourself up by the bootstraps. Yeah. Throw some dirt on your shoulder. Yeah.
Suck it up. It's going to be all right. Mm-hmm. No. Let me deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, I just telling someone to suck it up is just, it doesn't help anybody.
No, I mean, I think there's a lot of evidence and data shows that it doesn't help. Suppressing those feelings and emotions leads to a lot of really dysfunctional behavior, family dysfunction. It's why we see, you know, this cycle of dysfunction. It replays over and over again in families, this abuse. Yeah, I mean, I just think it's super wonderful that you're so willing and eager to share, because I guarantee the more you talk about it, somebody, it's going to resonate with somebody and some years from now, somebody's going to ask a person, you know, what helped you accept it? And they're going to say, well, I heard this lady, Kelly, talking about her story. So they might, you're offering to them an experience you weren't afforded. So
it's the same old saying, there's strength in numbers.
Yeah.
There's strength in the more people that talk about it. There's strength in more people that can come together and help each other.
Mm-hmm.
And say, okay, let's figure this out. Let's help each other.
Which, you know, Kelly, is exactly the reason why this podcast. We have, you know, some of this podcast, we talk about some silly things and we do some really short episodes, but we also have these kinds of episodes in our playlist, because we very much believe in this concept of changing those social norms, those norms. I don't like my generation norms that we don't talk about this stuff. So we're going to talk about it here on the podcast, because, and you're exactly right, I've had people even on this podcast, or definitely people out in the community, when you talk about the work we do at Safe on Main, and they're like, oh, I really appreciate that you help rape victims. They get quiet when they say the word rape, or they look around and then say it.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much stigma attached to rape, sexual assault, all these topics that we deal with every day here. And all you and I are doing by having this conversation is normalizing a conversation that makes it not shameful, not embarrassing, because it's nothing you did.
No.
And it's when we normalize it, the conversation, then I think we're going to see more and more people feel free to talk about it. And then real healing is going to get done. So.
And the justice. And that's something else I don't think a lot of people know is you don't have to prosecute right away, but my advice is to do a DNA kit, go to the hospital, they can have that, and if a year or two later down the road, okay. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I do know what you mean.
A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that. My advice, though, is to get justice right away and don't have shame.
Yeah.
Get your justice.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, Kelly, your story is amazing. Is there, you know, before we wrap this up, is there any last advice you have or any last thing you think in your story that you want to share? I mean, and again, we're going to call on you now for more opportunities to share your story as much as you want, of course. because it will always offer a space for your voice. But yeah, is there anything on today's podcast that you think, boy, I don't want to close this mics down without saying this?
I just think with survivors, it's not your fault. It's nothing you did. It's nothing you said. It's nothing you wore. It is not your fault. Don't be ashamed. And know that you are worthy, that love yourself and loving yourself and accepting what happened. Accept it. That's the main thing. Accept it. This is a part of you now. Good
it's
or bad.
It's a scar you wear.
Yeah, it's one of your scars, but it's just a scar. And over time, that scar does lighten up.
Yeah.
It does get better.
Well, that's a powerful message. Yeah. Own it. Accept it. Heal from it.
Correct. Yeah.
Wow, Kelly, thank you so much for sharing your story. I appreciate you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I wish you the very best in your continued journey. And any way that we can help out, we would love to do that. And also, just so you know, on this podcast, when I post this, I will also put some links to services, and I'll try to pull some quote out of something you said and put that in the show notes as well, so people that can kind of jump out as a reason to listen to this. So,
because
okay. I think people need to hear this. So.
I appreciate it. I'm glad I got this opportunity.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Kelly, very much.
Thank you.